Hey everyone, I want to take a moment to recommend another podcast called Scorned, Love Kills. On Scorned, Love Kills, the podcast from ID, find out what happens when lust and obsession turn deadly. With direct audio from the hit TV show, uncover true and unexpected stories about love gone wrong. Like how a husband in South Carolina gets carried away with his underground gambling business, leading to debt and infidelity, and ending in violence. And if you like our show, I know you're gonna love this part. In each episode, you get to hear from reporters, law enforcement, and psychologists close to each crime as they investigate the dark side of love. Here's an episode I think you might enjoy. It's called Handcuffs for Three. George Arthur and his wife are two of Los Angeles County Sheriff's finest. But when their open marriage mixes work with pleasure, their lives are forever changed by a cold-hearted killing that takes police more than a decade to solve. Listen to Scorned, Love Kills, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Did you have an imaginary friend growing up? Studies suggest nearly half of all children do at some point, and by the age of 7 or 8, most kids grow out of it. But over the past century, mass media has introduced a strange new twist on the imaginary friend, one that people don't grow out of, but rather grow into. It's called the parasocial relationship. Instead of a real relationship with an imaginary friend, it's an imaginary relationship with a real person. Psychologists define it as a one-sided emotional bond when someone develops a deep sense of intimacy with a person they've never actually met. It's usually a celebrity or public figure. You watch them long enough, hear their voice every day, and something shifts. They smile into the camera, and you feel seen. They share a story, and it feels like they're talking directly to you. I guess like I'm doing right now. Most of the time, it's harmless, a comforting illusion that fills a social void. But sometimes, illusions can become delusions, and delusions can become an obsession. For decades, celebrities have often dealt with obsessive stalkers born from parasocial fixations. And today, social media has accelerated the phenomenon exceptionally, making creators and performers more accessible, relatable, and vulnerable than ever before. In 2018, a man in Florida spiraled into his own parasocial relationship with a woman he'd never met. A Bulgarian webcam model on the other side of the world became the center of his universe. In time, she became more important to the man than money, more important than his career, his future, his freedom, and ultimately, more important than his family, who he began to see as the only obstacle standing in his way. Join me now as we explore the bizarre and tragic case of the Amato family, where love turned lethal and fantasy became fatal. You'll hear how Grant Amato's obsession with an online model escalated from stolen credit cards to something darker, and how his fixation, even behind bars, didn't stop, finding a new target in a reality TV star who investigates the paranormal. 31-year-old Cody Amato was never late. Everyone at the Orlando Regional Medical Center knew that about him. As a nurse anesthetist, Cody had a routine, showing up 45 minutes early every day. It was something he and his friend, co-worker, and fellow nurse Chris Sisko took pride in.
You are scheduled to show up at the latest 7 o'clock, but you can show up earlier if you'd like, and so you can clock in at 6:45, and that's when you can start getting paid, but you're not considered late until you show up after 7. Cody and I and a couple others, we would show up even earlier than that, 6:15, 6:20, we would clock in, knowing that we weren't going to get paid, but we would, come and get our rooms ready, go see our patients in pre-op, see them ahead of time, talk about the care plan with our anesthesiologist. So I would say that Cody was never late, not even punctual. I would say he's always early. Never saw him show up late at all. Extremely dedicated, knowledgeable. He worked hard at being the CRNA that he was.
Chris and Cody took the job seriously. It was something they bonded over while training together in Orlando, Florida.
So the first time I met Cody Amato was in the spring of 2014. We were both applying for the same anesthesia program. We met down in Miami and we were interviewed for going to school. So I met him that day. It's kind of like you all meet in a classroom together. You meet each other, potential prospects. You get interviewed and then you leave. And then later on in the year, you find out if you got accepted. And then we both come to find out got accepted. And in January of 2015 is when we started our program together at the Orlando campus. So we started school together. And that consists of you go to class a couple of times a week, and then you have clinical after that. So you spend a good 40 to 60 hours a week between school and clinical time. So between 2015 and the early summer of 2017, we completed that 28-month program together. And so I would see him in class and both at clinical throughout the week for those 28 months. As soon as we graduated, in May of 2017, we signed on and started working together. As of late, I'd say over the last, maybe since we started actually working together, graduated and working, he would spend more time with my family, come over and have dinner or whatever, meet my wife, meet my kids. So he was probably my closest friend at work.
By January 25th, 2019, the two of them had been working side by side for nearly 2 years. That morning, Chris clocked in early as usual, fully expecting Cody to already be there.
I believe I looked at my timesheet. I clocked in at 6:19. Scheduled to be there no later than 7, so I would have expected him to be there before me. When I first got in, I had clocked in where we clock in at, and you walk right by that, and there's the surgery OR board where you can see where your case assignment is for the day. I had ran into a colleague of ours that typically works overnight, and she had said, Cody's not here. I haven't seen him yet. He's not in pre-op. Have you heard from him? And of course, I was like, no, I just got here. I haven't heard from him yet. I went about, the next couple minutes, I went to pre-op just to see for myself, to see if he was there, and he wasn't there. So I looked at whatever room he was supposed to be in, and he wasn't in there. So then I ran into the colleague again, and she had expressed like a little bit more concern this time. I never could recall a time when Cody would show up late to class, when he would not show up to class, when he would not come on time or not show up to clinical. I never heard of an instance where he, just did not show up for any reason.
Becoming mildly concerned about Cody, Chris started texting him to find out where he was.
Cody has an iPhone like I do, And I know that when you have the iMessage, that when you send a text message, typically it goes through in blue, which means that the phone received the text message. And so when I text him, you know, hey, where are you? It went through just green, like the phone didn't receive the text message, like it's either out of service or it's dead. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just try to give him a buzz. So I tried to call the phone, you know, rang a couple times and went straight to voicemail. I did that a couple times. And then I had talked to a couple other colleagues about him not showing up. And everybody's response was, I can't believe he's not here. This is so out of ordinary. Why would he not show up? He always had his phone on him. He should have answered, called back, something.
For most people, showing up late to an early shift wouldn't raise any red flags. But Cody wasn't most people. In just a few short years, he'd built a reputation for reliability. So when he didn't walk in through those sliding doors right on time, everybody noticed.
So we bounced around the idea of like what we should do if somebody should try to go to his house or whatever, or if somebody should try to call a wellness check. Well, none of us had ever called a wellness check before. So I just started Googling like how to do one. And I called in and I got some, maybe a dispatcher or somebody. And I had said, hey, my friend's not at work. I'd just like to call in an official wellness check to see where he's at. They had asked me a couple things about him. And I expressed my concern. And they said, well, we'll send somebody over to the house and we'll keep you informed.
Deputy Todd Motorson with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office was dispatched to 2112 Sultan Circle in Chuliota, Florida. This is where Cody lived with his parents, 59-year-old Chad Amato and 61-year-old Margaret Amato. When Deputy Motorson arrived around 9:15 a.m., everything appeared normal from the outside. Cody's green Honda sat in the driveway. His parents' car was parked in the garage. But when he knocked on the front door, no one answered. So he circled the house, knocking on every door and window, loudly announcing himself. He then leaned on the air horn of his cruiser, hoping to wake the family if they were still sleeping.
The concern rose to the level where I felt like we needed to gain access to the home to check on the well-being of Cody. And so I contacted the supervisor, explained all the details of what my concern were, the totality of the circumstances, if you will, and requested to enter the home. The first request was denied as far as the force entry. She wanted to do a little more due diligence before we damaged somebody's property.
Deputy Motorson tried calling all three of their cell phones. None of them picked up.
I requested a backup unit, and Deputy Brent Matre responded to assist me. Once I found an access point where we didn't have to create damage, she said to go ahead in. We received permission to go into the home. Based on my 28 years of law enforcement experience, you sort of learn little tricks that you can do to try to access homes. And one of the things that I know that is, if a deadbolt isn't fully engaged, you can sometimes use an instrument such as a knife to try to slide that deadbolt back. I tried it on the front. It didn't work. It was fully engaged. And there was a back door that I was able to slide the deadbolt using my knife, creating an access point.
When backup arrived, the deputies entered the home through the back door, and it didn't take long. One by one, they discovered the bodies of Cody, Chad, and Margaret, each in a different room, each already gone.
So the first one that we came to was in a kitchen area. The second one was in a, what I'll describe to be sort of a storage slash workout room off of the garage. And the last one was in a, what I'll describe to be a sort of set up as a home office area with a desk.
All three were shot in the head. When we were kids, our dreams were wild. Flying superheroes, rock stars, inventors of time machines. But then we grew up and things kind of change. We start to see how our passions and talents could actually shape something lasting. Instead of saving the world in a cape, Maybe you start dreaming of owning your own business. You'll need a website, a payment system, a logo, and a way to advertise to new customers. It can all be overwhelming and confusing. But thankfully, that's where today's sponsor, Shopify, comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. From household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started. What if I can't design a website? Shopify's got you from the get-go with beautiful, ready-to-go templates to match your brand's style. What if I need a hand? Get help with everyday tasks like enhancing product images, writing product descriptions, or generating discount codes with Shopify's AI tools created for commerce. What if people haven't heard about my brand? Shopify helps you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. And what if I get stuck? Shopify's always around to share their advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. Turn those dreams into and give them the best shot at success with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/madness. Go to shopify.com/madness. shopify.com/madness. When detectives arrived at the Amato home that Friday morning, it looked, at first glance, like a murder-suicide.
Nothing was taken nor missing from the house. No signs of any type of home invasion, burglary, nor robbery.
Assistant State Attorney Stuart Stone later described what they found inside.
Inside that house are the dead bodies of Margaret Amato, Chad Amato, and Cody Amato, each shot through the head, execution style. Margaret, she's sitting in a chair. She's slumped over at her computer desk, in front of her computer, with her face down on her keyboard. Chad Amato is laying on his back, face up in the kitchen. Cody Amato is laying on his side in a fetal position at the threshold of the door of the house that connects the house to the garage.
Cody was still in his hospital scrubs from the night before. A 9mm handgun lay near his body.
The handgun near Cody's body and four shell casings in the vicinity of each body to correspond to the number of wounds. There are two gunshot wounds to Chad and one each to the heads of Margaret and Cody. The four shell casings that were found in the house match the gun that was found near Cody. Those shell casings were ejected from that gun. So it would appear, obviously, that was the gun that Cody used to kill his mother, kill his father, and then kill himself. Oh, so it would appear.
Detectives also noticed that Chad had been carrying a gun of his own.
A holster with a gun on it, on Chad's right hip, underneath Chad's belt, make it appear that there was some kind of confrontation between Cody and Chad that required Chad to arm himself.
On the surface, it seemed tragically straightforward. Cody had killed his parents, then himself. But as investigators dug deeper, the scene started to tell a very different story. The first red flag was the blood.
He was shot. Clearly, he was shot and went down at that door where the garage connects into the house. When Cody was shot, that door that leads from the house into the garage, it was open. Yet when the deputies arrived, that door was closed.
That detail told investigators the scene had been altered after the murders, and the inconsistencies didn't stop there.
Chad's right hip in that holster was a gun. Well, Chad is right-handed. Everything that Chad did was right-handed. The holstered gun was placed on Chad's hip, backward, for a right-handed shooter.
The way Chad's holster was positioned made no sense for a right-handed man. And then came something even more telling.
Additionally, A spot of blood was found on Chad's pants underneath the holster, and I emphasize underneath the holster. The significance of that is obvious.
Whoever placed the holster on Chad had done it after he was already dead. The final blow to the murder-suicide theory came from ballistics.
The four bullets, once again, distinguish the shell casings from the bullets, the projectiles. The four bullets that killed Margaret, Chad, and Cody and found and recovered at the scene were not fired from that gun. They were not fired from the gun that was near Cody. The gun that killed has never been found.
Which meant only one thing. Someone with access to Cody's handgun had staged the crime scene, carefully planting evidence to make it look like Cody was the killer. But who? Detectives soon learned there was a fourth member of the Amato family living at 2112 Sultan Circle, Cody's younger brother, 29-year-old Grant Amato. But when police searched the house, his bedroom was empty, and his white 96 Honda Accord was gone from the driveway. And while his parents and brother lay dead inside the home, Grant was nowhere to be found. The day after, a BOLO was issued for Grant in his car, and Orange County deputies found Grant at a nearby hotel. When officers knocked on his door, Grant came out calmly, agreeing to speak with investigators without resistance. Growing up, Grant and his brother Cody had been inseparable. They joined the weightlifting team together at Timber Creek High School, and both pursued nursing careers, planning to become nurse anesthetists together. They even dreamed of buying matching BMWs and taking over their parents' home when Chad and Margaret retired to Tennessee. The brothers were following in their father's footsteps in the medical world, as Chad was a local pharmacist. Their mother, Margaret, was a homemaker who devoted herself to rehabilitating horses. Like his brother Cody, Grant was intelligent, ambitious, and had a clear path forward in healthcare. But somewhere along the way, the pressure began to break him. While Cody excelled in their anesthesiology program, Grant failed out. By 2018, he was back living at home, working as a registered nurse in Orlando. Although his family knew he was struggling with disappointment, they believed it was something they could get through together. They had no idea how wrong they were. Here's State Attorney Stuart Stone.
Now, on January 26th, he agreed to give an interview with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office investigators in this case. During that interview, he admits to being home all day with his mother. He also admits to being home when his father, Chad, gets home. This occurred 5:30, 5:45 in the evening. And he also admits to being home when Cody got home. Grant Amato says that that occurred around 10:30 in the evening.
Grant acknowledged there had been growing tensions in the house, centered around a woman he'd met online. But according to him, his father had caught him breaking a promise to cut off contact with her that night. Chad told him to pack his things and leave.
Not once during that police interview, it's about 4 hours long, not once did that police interview did he ask about his family or ask them why he was there and why they were talking to him and questioning him.
Detectives pressed harder.
When he's asked by one of the investigators, he's asked this question: what do you think happened to bring law enforcement to your home? Grant Amato, unprompted, his answer was that there was a shooting between Cody and my dad.
But Grant insisted he had nothing to do with harming his family. After the interview, Grant was free to go, but police had already searched his hotel room and were beginning to process what they discovered.
Found in that hotel, among other items in possession, were a pair of black leather gloves. These are just regular cold weather black leather gloves. Gunshot residue on the outside of those gloves, the defendant's DNA on the inside, and the cuffs on the inside.
As investigators dug deeper into Grant's life, they uncovered a story of addiction and obsession that had been destroying his family for months. And it all began in June 2018, when Grant was arrested at work for stealing medications. Unemployed and ashamed, Grant retreated to his computer, telling his parents he was trying to become a professional gamer on Twitch, something investigators would eventually learn was a lie.
The answer to that question lies across the ocean in Bulgaria and a woman named Sylvie, if that's her real name. Grant Amato was and is obsessed with this woman. Sylvie is an internet cam model. I put quotation marks around the word model, working from Bulgaria. Grant Amato became addicted to her, consumed with her, possessed by her, to the point that he was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars of the family's money on her. Hundreds of thousands of dollars to, quote, be with her on our internet website.
Grant believed he'd fallen in love with an internet cam girl. For those unfamiliar, a cam girl is an adult performer who live streams online. Viewers can watch for free, but interaction is limited. Pay enough, and she'll do things you ask. And for some, that attention starts to feel like a form of intimacy. And that's what happened to Grant. To him, Sylvie wasn't just a performer on a screen. She was someone he believed he had a relationship with, and he was willing to pay whatever it took to keep that illusion alive.
And he presented to her a persona that was not who he really was. A professional gamer, owned his own home, drove a BMW. That's what the persona was that he presented himself to her.
Behind the screen, Grant's spending spiraled out of control. Tens of thousands of dollars at a time. $20,000 in a single night. Gifts mailed overseas. To keep paying, he stole. From his father's accounts, from his brother Cody, he maxed out the family credit cards, even took out a loan against the house. In only 6 months, he drained $200,000 from the people closest to him, every penny wired to Bulgaria. But instead of pressing charges, his family tried to help. Chad remortgaged the house to cover the debt. They encouraged Grant to seek treatment. In December 2018, he entered a rehab facility for internet addiction. And while he was there, his parents decided to take action of their own to make sure he'd never talk to Sylvie again.
And when his parents found out about his, quote, relationship with Sylvie and the tremendous amounts of money that he was spending on her, they contacted her and they let her know the lies that he was telling her and who he really was. And that effectively ended his relationship with Sylvie. Sylvie now knew that Grant Amato was not a professional gamer, did not own his own house, did not drive a BMW. And to Grant Amato, that was the end of the world. It was nothing to live for. And he was furious with his family for ending his world, his life as he believed it to exist.
If you're a woman in your 40s or have been lucky enough to make it through alive to the other side, then maybe you'll agree with me. I feel like there was just certain things that I wasn't prepared for. I mean, it's a lot. Like the night sweats, sudden moments of brain fog, wide awake at 3 a.m., ready to solve the world's problems. And as if that wasn't enough to deal with, then came my hair situation. It just stopped growing. Not only that, it felt thinner and looked like it had just given up on life. So that's when I started trying all of these different hair products, spending all kinds of money, hoping that just maybe one of them would solve this problem. And none of them did, because none of those things addressed the root cause of my hair dilemma. The stress, the hormones, lack of certain nutrients. That's until I started taking Nutrafol, the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand trusted by over 1.5 million people. And there's a good reason why. Because Nutrafol's formulations take a proactive approach with your hair, built with clinically effective natural ingredients that target the root causes of thinning. You can also feel great about what you're putting into your body since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified. certified, the gold standard in third-party certification for supplements. And I can honestly say it's the first thing I tried that actually made a real lasting difference. 6 months in, my hair felt noticeably thicker, stronger, and healthier. And the great thing about Nutrafol is that adding it to your daily routine is simple. Just go to Nutrafol.com to make your purchase online with no prescription needed. And automated deliveries and free shipping keep you consistent. With a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20%. Plus, you'll have access to free one-on-one naturopathic doctor consults to support you on your hair growth journey, with a Headspace meditation membership also included. If you're having a hair situation like I was, why not try Nutrafol? See thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. And for a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Minds of Madness listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code MADNESS. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code MADNESS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code MADNESS. We've also included a link in our show notes.
When Grant left rehab in January 2019, his family let him come back home if he promised not to contact Sylvia again. But that promise didn't last. Just days before the murders, Chad caught him online with her again.
On January 22nd, 2019, just 2 days before the murder, Brent Amato typed an 8-page letter on his computer to 6 other men that were in that internet virtual room that interacted with Sylvia: Jim, Josh, Ian, Sven, Frank, and Wolf. In the letter, the defendant details his obsession with Sylvia, the lies he told her and told the group, and his contempt for his family for revealing to Sylvia that he was not who he portrayed himself to be, and how life as he knows it is over.
The letter Grant wrote that night is perhaps the clearest window into his mind.
I lied to her and you guys from the beginning about myself. I'm not a professional gamer, did not own my own house, and did not drive a BMW. I felt intimidated from the onset of the room environment and felt like I had to be something far more unique than I was. My family found out about her, the website, and all the money I had been spending on everything. They would not have this and subsequently ambushed me where I was staying and forcefully signed me into a clinic in Fort Lauderdale here in Florida. This was an addiction clinic. They felt that I had an unhealthy addiction because of the type of profession Sylvie has and the quantity of money that I had spent in the span of 6 months that I had known her. I was not allowed to leave the clinic, and while I was there, I was not allowed access to the internet. I did not have access to my phone. I did not have access to my computer. I was admitted in there until I was able to convince my family that I was fine and able to be released on January 9th. By this time, the damage was done. My family had hacked my computer at home, gained access to my phone records and all my personal things related to Sylvie. They then took it upon themselves to lie to her about so many things related to me, which in turn led her to believe me even less after I finally came clean to her about the lies I told you above.
It was a manifesto of resentment, a man furious with his family for exposing his lies, and desperate to hold on to the fantasy he believed was love.
While Sylvie says that the reason why she can't forgive me is solely because of what I did, I can't help but feel that it is all part of it. I will never be able to forgive myself for making Sylvie sad and betraying her trust in me. I care for her deeply and wish for an actual second chance with her, and I am willing to do whatever it takes to be able to show the real me to anyone and to build a relationship that doesn't involve lies.
The depth of his parasocial obsession is laid bare with his description of life without Sylvie.
Everything between me and Sylvie grew so fast. I hate myself for what I did, and I hate the thought of never getting to be with her again. After everything that I gave and everything that I tried to do with her, I just can't comprehend being without her. I am unable to function normally without her, not hearing her good mornings or good nights, not talking to her for hours a day, not being a part of her room and her life outside of it. It's the most painful experience I've ever been through, and I will never get out. I will never get over her, and I never plan to simply replace her with the next one. I truly love this woman at first sight, and I fell in love with her over the months that I got to know everything about her. She never believed that you could love someone so fast, but I did. I was part of everything to do with her, and now I'm reduced down to only being able to send her DM direct messages on her public Twitter. No private Twitter, no phone number, nothing. I send her messages every day, and I rarely get a response from her.
The words reveal a complete collapse of perspective. Without her, life itself had no meaning.
Seeing her be able to be so happy without me in her life is something I hope you guys never have to live through. It's a feeling that makes you wish you did not exist in this world. It's a feeling that rips your heart out and makes you realize how pointless everything is without her. It makes you give up on life as I have without her. I don't think you guys would ever be as stupid as I was, but don't ever lose her. Don't ever do anything against her. I can't give up on her, and I will never go to someone else. She is my everything, and I will give her my life to simply be able to make her smile again. Don't ever lose her, guys. She is someone that you will never forget and never want to forget, no matter how painful. I hope I can be with her again.
Grant's own writing shows the spiral had reached its breaking point. A man who believed he had nothing left, except for an obsession that had already cost his family everything. Along with this letter discovered on Grant's computer, investigators kept uncovering more. Then, 4 days after the murders, he was arrested and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. From there, prosecutors began piecing together what they believed happened inside the Amato home.
Morgan was the first one to die. She was sitting at her computer when she was shot in the left back side of the head with the bullet coming out her right cheek. The last human activity that took place on that computer occurred at 4:44 p.m. He was home alone with his mother all day when the last human activity occurs on her computer.
Margaret's computer activity gave them the first timestamp. Because she was still seated at her desk, investigators concluded she was killed almost immediately after the final keystroke. Grant then waited for his dad to come home.
Chad was the second one to die. He was shot once behind his right ear in the back of his head as he was standing in the kitchen shortly after he gets home from work. That first shot, Chad was shot twice in the head. That first shot occurs approximately 5:25, 5:30 that evening. Chad falls down after the first shot, gets him behind the ear, and literally goes through the side of his head. He falls down, he crawls around the kitchen counter to where he shot a second time in the back of his head, execution style. How do we know this? Chad's iPhone almost exactly shows what Chad was doing when he left work until the time that he arrived at home, which includes how many steps he took when he got home and walked into the house. He had one of those applications. The crime scene shows a smearing of blood from where Chad was first shot to where he crawled around the kitchen counter and where he was shot a second time in the back of the head. The bullets were recovered. The first shot was recovered from an upper kitchen cabinet where Chad was standing. The second bullet strikes Chad in the back of the head as he's face down, goes through his head, and strikes the kitchen tile.
The evidence showed no confrontation. Chad was ambushed, cut down in his own kitchen, before he ever knew what had happened to his wife. And finally, Cody was still in his scrubs, walking through the garage door after a long shift, unaware he was stepping into an execution.
Cody was the third and the last one to die. Cody leaves work at approximately 9:15 that evening. Cody worked at RMC as a nurse anesthetist. Cody's E-Pass toll records show him going through the Dean Road toll plaza eastbound on the way home at 9:36 p.m. Moments later, Cody arrives home. He parks his vehicle under a carport. He gets out of his car. He enters the house through the garage, enters the threshold of the door that connects. And as he enters the threshold, he's shot once in the face, immediately below his right eye, with the bullet going right through his head and out the back of his head. And Cody is found in a fetal position at the threshold of that door.
But Grant didn't flee the murder scene right away.
What the defendant did in this case is he staged a murder-suicide scene. And in order to do that, he planted certain items of evidence at the scene to give the appearance of a murder-suicide. There were three items of evidence that Grant D'Amato planted to make it appear that Cody killed his mother and father and then killed himself. A handgun and four shell casings and a holster with a gun on it on Chad's right hip.
The stage scene was meant to frame Cody as the killer, but Grant's attempt to rewrite the crime left investigators with even more questions.
Grant D'Amato was located on January 26th, just 2 days after the murders. A search of his car was conducted, and in his car, his pants were found. And in his pants was a flash drive. Transferred onto that flash drive were the contents, the data, of a computer that was located in Grant D'Amato's room at 2112 Sultan Circle. And most critically, after the data was transferred, you unplugged the flash drive from the computer. That flash drive was unplugged from that computer at 12:27 a.m., Friday, January 25th. Grant D'Amato was in that house with the dead bodies of his mother, father, and brother for at least 2.5 hours, probably longer.
For investigators, the flash drive told the final story. Grant hadn't just killed his family. He'd stayed in the house with their bodies for hours, collecting files, moving data, acting as if he had all the time in the world. I want to take a moment to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts, and I think it's mandatory listening for any true crime fan. It's called Small Town Dicks. On Small Town Dicks, the hosts sit down with real detectives to hear the stories of the cases that stayed with them long after the investigation ended. Cases that shaped their careers and their lives. These aren't dramatizations or secondhand retellings. These are firsthand accounts from the people who were in the room, on the scene, men solving the case. The show is hosted by Emmy-winning actress Yardley Smith. Yeah, the voice of Lisa Simpson, alongside identical twin detectives, Dan and Dave, and renowned cold case investigator, Paul Holes, who developed the revolutionary DNA technology that helped catch the Golden State Killer. Over the last 16 seasons, Small Town Dicks has built a reputation for respectful, compelling storytelling and offers an extremely rare, behind-the-scenes look at how investigations actually unfold. From the first lead to the final arrest, and the emotional toll it takes on everyone involved. So if you're ready for a true crime podcast that trades sensationalism for substance, check out Small Town Dicks. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts or at smalltowndicks.com. Grant didn't wipe out his family in a sudden outburst. This was deliberate. A calculated attempt to clear his path between him and Sylvie. And what he did after the murders proved it.
At 12:08 a.m. on January 25th, more than 6 hours after he kills his father, Chad, he accesses his father's USA bank account using his dead father's iPhone to add an account on for funds transfer. You access your account and you can add on to that account another fund to which you can transfer money. The account that was added for funds transfer was the defendant's PNC bank checking account.
Instead of grieving about what he'd done, he was stealing, using his father's phone to reroute money straight into his own account.
Grant Amato was so obsessed with this woman. At 2:53 a.m., after leaving the house that contained the three dead bodies of his family, the defendant goes to a nearby Publix parking lot, logs onto their Wi-Fi, and uses his dead brother's checking account to pay $599.99 to get onto Sylvie's website at 3:02 in the morning. That's how obsessed he was with that woman. That's what this case is about. It's about his blind obsession with this woman, the end of the world, as he believed it to be because of his family, and his absolute contempt for those that he held responsible.
By July 2019, Grant was on trial for murdering his parents and his brother. Although he claimed he was innocent, the jury didn't buy it, and Grant Amato was found guilty on all counts, sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, you might think the story of Grant Amato would have ended with a life sentence, but some patterns run too deep to break. 5 years later, in March of 2024, a woman named Victoria Goodwin sat down to watch a true crime documentary called Control-Alt-Desire, a story of the Amato family murders. And she just didn't become fascinated by the case. She became fascinated by Grant. At the time, Victoria was married to Aaron Goodwin, one of the stars of the paranormal reality show Ghost Adventures. And on the surface, their marriage looked solid, successful, happy, glamorous. But behind the scenes, Victoria was writing to Grant Amato in prison. And soon, another parasocial relationship was born. Their letters escalated into romance, and by October 2024, things had turned dark. Victoria confessed she loved Grant, but her husband Aaron wouldn't accept a divorce. So together, they started talking about murder. Victoria told Grant she wanted Aaron gone, and Grant promised he could arrange it behind bars. In one exchange, she asked, "Am I a bad person?" Grant pressed her on why. She answered, "Because I choose to end his existence, not divorce." From there, the plan grew chillingly specific. Victoria gave Grant Aaron's travel schedule, hotel location, even his cigarette breaks outside. She used the Find My app to track his movements in real time, and even set $11,000 aside for the job. Grant's role was simple. From his prison cell, he'd call Aaron to distract him, while a hired hitman slipped into the hotel room. But the plot unraveled before it began. In October 2024, during a routine search of Grant's cell, guards found a contraband phone. Inside it were messages with Victoria laying out the entire plan. Las Vegas police were immediately alerted. On March 6th, 2025, Victoria Goodwin was arrested at her Las Vegas home for solicitation and conspiracy to commit murder. In court, Aaron revealed he'd first learned in September 2024 that Victoria had been cheating with multiple men, including her secret, emotionally intimate relationship with convicted murderer Grant Amato. Even then, Aaron gave her a choice, divorce or reconciliation. Victoria told him she didn't want to lose him. But behind his back, she was already planning his death. When the conspiracy was exposed, Aaron immediately filed for divorce. And that wasn't the only shock. He soon discovered Victoria had drained $60,000 from their joint bank accounts, funneling the money to Grant Amato and his associates. When questioned, Victoria tried to downplay the plot, claiming her messages were just fantasies and daydreams. But the evidence told a different story. In April 2025, she pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit murder, and the judge sentenced her to serve between 36 and 90 months behind bars. At sentencing, Aaron stood in court and addressed her directly.
Your Honor, for 7 years I thought I was in the most loving relationship and marriage with my best friend. Someone who I trusted full heart and laughed with every day. I thought we were something very special. And so did everyone else. Now this girlfriend, she put a hit out to kill me more than once and fell more in love with Amada. They even got spiritually married. And now I was called the first husband. The fact that this person did all this to me with no worry, no care, or love in her heart for me. She claims she's remorseful now that she's been caught. But there at no time before did she ever try to stop this from happening. She tried to have me killed. She gave my location to people, with people she truly believed were gonna harm me. She even asked for the updates on the murder. And this was all when I was just a loving husband, I thought. Whether she got minimum or maximum time, I still won't feel safe whenever she's released.
The strange bond between Victoria and Grant raises unsettling questions. Some believe Victoria developed her own parasocial relationship with Grant, much like the obsession that had consumed him with Sylvie. Under this view, Aaron became an obstacle standing between her and a fantasy of true love. But there's a darker possibility. What if it wasn't a delusion at all? What if Victoria's relationship with Grant was calculated, a manipulation of someone whose weaknesses were already well known? Grant's history was no secret. Parasocial fantasies, virtual attachments, and the willingness to kill when his illusion was threatened. If Victoria understood that, she may not have been swept into a fantasy. She may have been orchestrating one. Maybe it was both. Either way, the pattern is clear. Once again, Grant Amato seemed ready to kill for a woman he'd never met. Hey everyone, I want to take a moment to recommend another podcast called Scorned, Love Kills. On Scorned, Love Kills, the podcast from ID, find out what happens when lust and obsession turn deadly. With direct audio from the hit TV show, uncover true and unexpected stories about love gone wrong. Like how a husband in South Carolina gets carried away with his underground gambling business, leading to debt and infidelity, and ending in violence. And if you like our show, I know you're gonna love this part. In each episode, you get to hear from reporters, law enforcement, and psychologists close to each crime as they investigate the dark side of love. Here's an episode I think you might enjoy. It's called Handcuffs for Three. George Arthur and his wife are two of Los Angeles County Sheriff's finest. But when their open marriage mixes work with pleasure, their lives are forever changed by a cold-hearted killing that takes police more than a decade to solve. Listen to Scorned, Love Kills, wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Chad and Margaret Amato were loving parents who gave everything they had to their family, no matter the sacrifice. Cody carried the same spirit, a brother who'd spent his last dollar to help Grant, the friend who never let anyone down, the nurse who never missed a shift and always showed up early. They were a family of second chances, of forgiveness, of belief in redemption, even when it cost them everything. Their deaths were more than a triple homicide. They were a destruction of unconditional love by parasocial delusion. And the ripples didn't stop there. Aaron Goodwin's trust, his finances, even his safety, were all shattered. A reminder that Grant D'Amato's reach and the manipulations he inspired extended far beyond prison walls. In our own hyper-connected world, where intimacy can be purchased and relationships exist entirely on screens, the D'Amato case stands as a warning. The line between connection and obsession, between love and delusion, has never been thinner. For Grant D'Amato, illusion was more real than reality. It was worth more than money, more important than family, and more deadly than anyone imagined. Three innocent people died for a relationship that never existed, and it nearly happened again. Because for some, the fantasy never dies. It just finds another screen to live behind. And now I'd like to introduce the podcast, Buried, Inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation.
I'm Bob Mata, host of Buried, Inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation, which is Defense Diaries' remastered re-release of the Gacy tape season. The original Gacy recordings have been professionally remastered for enhanced clarity, bringing new life to this groundbreaking investigation. Just to be clear, this podcast is not another John Wayne Gacy biography. No, this is the story of the victims, the desperate investigation to find them, and the lines that were crossed to bring their killer to justice. The case shocked the nation and defined a generation of true crime. But the full story of just exactly how Gacy was caught has never been told. Until now.
Well, there's a new podcast that is re-examining the investigation of serial killer John Wayne Gacy. And in the most recent episode, the host profiles a story about the key evidence in the case that he says isn't the story we've come to know.
If that doesn't show up in my report, then I was unaware of it that night.
That's a detail, I'm sorry, that I cannot remember.
Who were we to argue with, you know, state's attorneys and all that stuff? So I feel kind of bad about that end of it.
But he said that due to circumstances, we were not to tell anybody about that. So for years, I never mentioned it to anybody.
My father, Bob Mata Sr., represented John Wayne Gacy during his insanity defense trial in 1980. For decades, our family has possessed never-before-heard audio recordings of Gacy speaking candidly with his defense team. These tapes reveal the mind of one of America's most notorious serial killers.
I remember throwing Vic's body down the basement, but I do not remember throwing him in a hole or covering him over or anything like that.
How can I have any feeling about it? Once they weren't in the ground, they weren't my problem.
The incredible true story of how law enforcement took the monster down is now available everywhere you get your podcasts.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening. Thank you.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient unlocked. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.